It's Monday, November 26, 2012. You're listening to the Jack Blood Show. Thank you for being with us today. Crazy this day in history. It's the anniversary of the Mumbai attacks. Was that an inside job? Well, that's what everybody says. Also, some Iran-Contra historical news on the broadcast today. Tons of news, a wrap-up of Black Friday. It is Cyber Monday. Are you cyber shopping, shoppers? And Obama's got a new drone warfare rule book. Human rights groups don't like it. Are we going to get back on the phone and tell China and Russia and everybody else how to treat their citizens? Very difficult when we suck as an example. Welcome, my fellow thought criminals, enemies of the state, and Gitmo Nation. Yes, no agenda, global radio and affiliates. I hope you guys had a good... Did you take some time off? Spend some time with your family? I told you to do that on Friday, and you better listen to me. I did. Almost had two real days off. And well, how do you do this show again? What do you do? I've got James Corbett waiting in the wings from thecorbettreport.com. He's just come fresh off of a 9/11 conference on the other side of the world. We'll get a breakdown on that. And also take your calls throughout the show. 512-KEY-0411. 512-JEW-0411 or 539-0411. We'll get to your calls most likely in the second hour today. James Corbett is just an amazing researcher. He comes on the show once a month. We're very happy he does. The Corbett Report is an independent, listener-supported, alternative news source. It operates on the principle of open-source intelligence, provides podcasts, interviews, articles, and videos about breaking news and important issues from 9/11 truth, the false flag terror, the Big Brother police state, eugenics, geopolitics, and the central banking fraud, and more. Are we going over a debt cliff? I'm going to get that out of... What's the conspiracy there? I actually heard somebody on boards today calling it a conspiracy. Conspiracy to get more money out of you. You must have the money. You all went shopping this weekend, obviously. Corbett Report has been going now for several years. Just one of our favorite broadcasts. If you haven't been to CorbettReport.com, you need to go over there and start getting access to all the great information that they have. James Corbett is its fearless leader. He is on the other side of the world as we speak in Japan. James, good to see you this morning. Thank you for staying up late for us.
Hey, Jack, you old cattle rustler. Long time no speak. How you doing?
I'm all cattle, no hat over here. I'm great, man. How are you, and how was your Thanksgiving? Do you celebrate it over there where you are?
Not only do we not celebrate it in Japan at all, but me being Canadian, Thanksgiving comes in October, so it's long gone for us.
You're out. What about Black Friday? Do they have that in Japan?
No,
they must.
No, but I have been watching from afar with cringes as appropriate, but no, we don't get to experience that particular joy.
You know, of course, Mark Dice went and screamed at his bullhorn and told people they were ruining Thanksgiving and this was not very religious of them and Christian of them. That made the news. But I saw a great interview we're going to play in the second hour of Adam Kokesh, AdamVersusTheMan.com, where he very calmly interviews people. It does kind of a bit of a jaywalking segment. They know all about the consumer gadgets and all the different labels that are at the Walmart. They have no idea the countries Obama has bombed in their name. So, and he does it in a nice way. I want to play that in the second hour of the show today. Well, James, you have just been in, where is it, Kuala Lumpur? Where have you been talking to people about 9/11?
Well, indeed. I just flew in from Kuala Lumpur, and boy, are my arms tired. Yes, all the way straight from Malaysia. And I just got in basically a couple days ago and have been recovering, not from jet lag. I've only got 1 hour time difference, but really just a hectic week. And just got so much accomplished. That's all going to start spilling forth from CorbettReport.com any hour now. So your listeners can get a bit of a sneak preview of what's coming out.
Awesome, and we love that. I am hoping you got video. What kind of people go to Kuala Lumpur for a 9/11 conference?
That's a good question. Well, some of the co-presenters there at the conference itself included Cynthia McKinney, who I'm sure you know quite well, Richard Gage, Michelle Chosadovsky, Graham McQueen, Hans Kochler, Giletto Chiesa, better known as the guy behind the Zero documentary. We had Chandra Muzavar and Nulufar Bagwat, just people from all around the globe. It was really fascinating to be there as a fly on the wall listening to them, let alone presenting in their midst, which I felt a bit overwhelmed by.
Okay, and why Kuala Lumpur? What is the, who are you reaching over there, and what was the reaction? Give us kind of a breakdown on that.
All right, well, that's the real question, and it's kind of funny in a way when you think about it. This entire conference was put on by the Perdana Global Peace Foundation, which I'm sure not very many people have heard about, including myself. I'd vaguely heard of the organization before, but didn't really know anything about it until they invited me out to Kuala Lumpur to do this. And basically, this is one of two organizations that was founded by the former Prime Minister of Malaysia. His name is Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. And in many ways, I guess he's kind of like the Malaysian Ron Paul. I think there's some sort of analogy you could draw there. He also was a medical doctor who got into politics, got into parliament in 1964, and then eventually worked his way up through the Senate and became Prime Minister back in the 1980s. And under his leadership, he was prime minister for, I think, over 20 years. And under his reign, Malaysia really went through an incredible transformation. Basically, it was just an old tin mine outpost of the British Empire for a long time. And under Mahathir, it really transformed into an economic, not powerhouse, but certainly it was a rising star in the Asian economic sphere. So he really turned the country around. And if you go on Wikipedia, of course, it'll give you the standard line about what an evil, horrible person he was and how good, upstanding, respectable people like Al Gore wouldn't have anything to do with him, et cetera, et cetera. So of course, there's going to be those kind of biases. And there are some people in the Malaysia, to be fair, who don't exactly like him or his rule, but regardless, he did an incredible job.
Well, not here, people think Ron Paul is trying to kill old people and create mass genocide upon the country. So yeah,
exactly. Right. Well, exactly. I mean, it's similar to that. I mean, anytime you get someone who has revolutionary ideas, there's always going to be the backlash and the people who are hating against it. And I'm not really I don't have a dog in the fight, obviously, in Malaysian politics, but it was just interesting to see the ex-prime minister starting these organizations. One is the Perdana Global Peace Foundation. The other one is the Kuala Lumpur Organization to Criminalize War, or something to that effect. It's at criminalizewar.org. And that is the foundation that's been putting on these war crime tribunals there in Malaysia for several years now. And people may have heard about this from time to time. For example, earlier this year, they actually convicted Bush and Cheney and others in the Bush administration of torture in regards to the Iraq war. And they've been coming up with some startling, convictions. And it's a real tribunal they put on with an actual prosecution and defense. Yeah. And they present evidence and they go through it and they have witnesses, et cetera, et cetera. It's an incredible, incredible thing they're doing. But so few people actually really know about it, even in the alternative media. And that's the kind of thing that really struck me. So anyways, long story short,
well, if they did it at Walmart or did it in English, maybe it would carry over here a little bit more. I'm going to want to ask you when you're done with this, how many countries have Cheney and Bush been outlawed in and convicted in?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have an answer to that, because I'm not sure. I know there's more than one, so.
Well, there's been initiatives in a number of different countries. Even in my home of Canada, there's been movements to try to convict Bush and Cheney, or to get them at least arrested when they travel into the country, but that hasn't really flown. Bush actually canceled a trip to Switzerland, I believe it was last year or maybe 2010, when he had plans to travel there because there was a citizens movement to try to arrest him when he stepped foot in the country. So these people are at least starting to have to think about where they're traveling, think about their travel plans a little bit, which is the very, very least that we can hope to accomplish. But yes, I believe the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal was the first one to come with an actual conviction after prosecution. I stand to be corrected on that if I'm wrong, though.
Just when you wrap that up, James, there's another guy, a new president that you can convict for torture and war crimes and human rights violations.
Absolutely.
So I guess that will keep the world busy. That's why we rotate a guy in and out every 4 to 8 years. That sounds great. So was there a good attendance out there in Kuala Lumpur? And how were the people?
It was incredible. Yeah, no, they put on an excellent conference there. And just a great, huge hall they rented, absolutely packed out for the morning session of the 9/11 conference. There was at least, I think, 400 or 500 people packed into that room. Plus, they have pretty good quality video that they were taking there that unfortunately is on a Ustream right now, but not a lot of people know about it. So I'm going to start putting it up on my YouTube in the coming days so people can look forward to that. But it's all there. It's all on record, all the speeches and everything, so people can see that, including my own humble little presentation. I was asked [S2] Cool. [S1] To speak specifically about what happened at the Pentagon. So rather than do the usual kind of spiel that everyone would expect, I decided to convict Cheney and Rumsfeld with their own words and their own actions, just going by the official story and the stand down that obviously happened that day. And I don't know, I don't want to say ring my own horn, but I would say I did a pretty good job. So
yeah, you always do. Can you give us a few of the bullet points on that?
Well, basically, in terms of my presentation, it just goes from the fact of what Rumsfeld actually admitted doing on the morning of 9/11, which was after being informed of the first strike on the first tower, he went back to his office after a breakfast meeting he was having. And then when hearing about the second strike on the second tower, he decided to continue to proceed with a regularly scheduled meeting he had with his CIA briefer, Denny Watson. And despite the fact that at this point, the entire government apparatus is kicking into action and people are going crazy and they're starting, you know, video conferences to find out what's going on, the head of the Defense Department, the highest ranking member of the military and the de facto head of the military, really, in the president's absence, sat there in his office and actually turned some of his staffers away. And this is even according to the official story, because he wanted to, you know, make a few phone calls and go ahead with his briefing, even as Flight 77, or whatever we're told it was, was bearing down on the Pentagon. He was sitting there in his office taking his leisurely time doing absolutely nothing. And then I go into the whole story of Cheney and the bunker and the man who the young man who was giving the 50 miles out, 40 miles out, 30 miles out update. And in fact, a lot of people don't know that man was actually identified by name as Naval Officer Douglas Cochran back in 2010. And people tracked him down. One person even phoned him and got him on record talking about this. So, you know, 9/11 continues moving, and there's a lot of research going on that I'm sure a lot of people, unless you're really keeping up with it, probably don't know a lot where we're at. But long story short, for those who need the cliff notes, it was an inside job. So just in case you didn't know.
What hit the Pentagon? We still don't know. Isn't that amazing? After all these years, we're after the 11th year anniversary. Still, there's no footage. There's no real precise, clear evidence that a plane hit the Pentagon. And I'm not, you know, one of these no plane people. It's just I still haven't seen the plane. And you would think that they would, you know, put the world to rest and we wouldn't have to worry about this anymore and just show us the freaking video of the plane hitting the Pentagon. And that would explain, yeah, of course, the missile-shaped hole in the Pentagon, precisely in the place where a lot of the records, I guess, were kept. Isn't that right, James?
Well,
missing trillions of dollars that they lost somehow in the black ops programs.
Right. So in the second half of my presentation, basically going through the why, I get into the missing trillions, and I pinpoint, actually, there's a map that was released as part of the Zacharias Moussaoui prosecution. They released a map of who was killed in the Pentagon and exactly where they were and what offices they were in at the time. And it shows that well over 50% of the workers for something called Resource Services Washington were killed in the strike on the Pentagon. And this was the contractor that it was filled with accountants and bookkeepers and other people who were basically working on budget analysis. Surprise, surprise, the day after, of course, Rumsfeld gave his infamous press briefing saying there was a new war, a war on bureaucracy, to try to track down this, not 2.3, because in fact, the next year there was another 1.1. So we're talking $3.4 trillion that they couldn't account for, and that they were literally, their own budget analysis said that they were making up entries just to get the books to balance. So $3.4 trillion worth of that. And there's actually an Arlington County After Action report that was published that proves that there were budget documents in that section of the Pentagon that morning, because it was year end and they were trying to crunch the numbers. And lo and behold, this big explosion takes place. And a lot of the people die. So there is definitely ample grounds to start investigating that side of things. And I always say the follow the money dictum is absolutely essential in 9/11.
Sure, it's all over the place. In fact, this would be a great point to interject the Cynthia McKinney grilling of Rumsfeld and Myers asking where the missing trillions were, which is why I've always held her in such high esteem. And they still haven't answered the question. In fact, we've got more missing trillions at the Pentagon, and that's become a whole new issue. I might expect maybe even another attack on the most defended building in the world. You know what's interesting about that as well? There's a couple of other things, and I don't want to get on the Pentagon 9/11 too much, but you know, there are reports of people working inside hearing bombs going off before this alleged plane even hit, and that the fact that it hit an area that had just been newly constructed, I would assume, to either hide, conceal, or control the demolition.
That's right, and some of the clocks had even been stopped at 9:30, which is 8 minutes before the official story says that 77 hit, supposedly. So absolutely, there's all sorts of different discrepancies. And basically, I mean, you can make it your life's work just to look at specifically what happened at the Pentagon and probably still never sort out all the pieces of the puzzle, because just like any good black op, I guess, it's complicated enough to keep people busy trying to scramble about each and every last detail rather than looking at the big picture and trying to get something happening, which is what this conference was really about.
We're still trying to figure out who killed JFK. I mean, it's a tall order. What happened on the day of 9/11? A lot of things, of course, did happen. Did you ever see the FOIA? There was a FOIA request filled what Rumsfeld said to Carbone, that would be his and Myers' aide. General Myers, of course, was Joint Chiefs of Staff, folks, the morning of 9/11. And he was outside the Pentagon on the wonderfully preserved lawn after a plane had just exploded onto it. And that was a question a lot of people had. My lawn dies when there's, you know, bad weather for a week. This thing took a plane hit and it's perfect. But they're out there, and Rumsfeld says to Cambone, I think his name is, he goes, well, sweep it all up. This is what he told Myers. Sweep it all up. Go massive. Blame this on Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, whether it's real or we have any evidence or not, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. And I had that up on my old website, and I've lost it. I don't know what happened to it, and I've looked for it since, and I'm having trouble finding it. I guess it's easy to scrub something that important. I mean, that is kind of a smoking gun. No, they're just admitting we're going to blame it on these guys. This is what was intended all along in the Project for New American Century and leading up to 9/11. And that's exactly what they had planned to do. And there you've got Rumsfeld just saying it.
That's right. I must confess, I don't have a copy of that FOIA, or at least I don't think I do. I have quite a massive archive of documents, but I'm not sure if I have that specifically, but I'm certainly well familiar with the quote. And that's a good warning to the listeners out there that we can't just take these quotations for granted. I certainly hope people are saving documents and creating little archives of information, because as you say, I mean, especially in this digital age, it's so easy for them to scrub important pieces of information from the record like that. And just like that, it can be gone forever.
Yeah, it falls down the memory hole, and then a few years later you get Jesse Ventura's version of events, or you know, Dr. Judy Wood or something, and all the rest of that is forgotten. I actually interviewed the guy that put the FOIA request in and got it answered, and a lot of it, of course, was heavily redacted, but I thought that was almost admitting your guilt that you were making this up to blame it on somebody else. I don't know. I mean, it's just part a piece of the puzzle. So you guys also, out at your 9/11 conference, by the way, we're here with James Corbett, thecorbettreport.com. He joins us once a month here at the Jack Blood Show, No Agenda Global Radio and affiliates. The other talk was, conveniently enough, timely, very timely talk, war crimes in Palestine. You had a War Crimes in Palestine commission going, and meanwhile, I guess while you're in the middle of nowhere in Malaysia, Israel massively and mercilessly attacked Palestine.
Yeah, that was some bizarre, very bizarre and coincidental timing going on. It was kind of weird to be looking at the news and attending a commission talking about what was happening, you know, back in Castled, etc. And basically the things that we're hearing about from the witnesses that they brought in were actually taking place right as we were talking. Really bizarre. But just to give people the perspective on this, the Perdana Global Peace Foundation hosted the 9/11 conference, which was kind of a preparatory phase to what is going to hopefully turn into a commission, which is eventually hopefully going to turn into a tribunal, and someone is going to be prosecuted and hopefully convicted of war crimes when it comes to 9/11. And this is the kind of the process that things go through. So this this Palestine hearing is in the sort of second stage. It's at the commission hearing. So we're sitting there for a few days listening to some of the witnesses that they actually brought in from Gaza, from the West Bank, and some of the expert witnesses also, like Dr. Francis Boyle and Paola Mandica and others that they brought in to basically talk about what happened, what's been happening in Palestine for the last 20, 30 years, especially, and some of the war crimes that have been committed there. And just some harrowing testimony from some of these people, just incredible. But of course, one of the highlights or lowlights, or I don't really know what to call it, was a 15-year-old boy named Mahmoud Al-Samouni, who basically witnessed his entire family and extended family, dozens of people, get murdered by the Israelis right in front of his face. And just a horrific thing, this 15-year-old boy talking about when he was 12 years old, watching all these people get massacred right under his nose. And the most horrific part of it all was, as we were talking, as he was giving his witness testimony, the bombs were falling in Gaza, and we found out later that same day that some of his neighbors had died in the bombing. So just a horrific story, but it really brought it home what that was all about, and I'm really excited to be able to bring some of that out. I even had an interview with that 15-year-old boy and some of the other witnesses that were there. Just incredible testimony that's going to lead to a war crimes tribunal that will be prosecuting the Israel government, basically, for straight state crimes against Palestine.
What was said, if anything, on the attacks accused on Hamas in Palestine? I call them, you know, it's insensitive of me. Sorry, James. I call them bottle rockets being shot. By the way, Iron Dome, which is the intercepting system, the missile intercepting, call it Star Wars if you want, over Israel, funded by the NDAA, I think that's important to note, intercepted, they say, 421 rockets. Now, I have no idea if any of this is happening. Quite frankly, it's not, you know, can I trust my own lying eyes? Do I trust the news? Who do I trust here? So what talk, if any, was there at your conference and with people who are trying to get to the bottom of the Israel-Palestine question on, is Palestine really attacking Israel? Is Israel under any kind of a real threat? And I guess then maybe we should get to the bottom of who is Hamas and who started, funded them, and who controlled them, if indeed they are firing and attacking Israel. Could it be that they were attacked first and they're fighting back? They figure they got nothing to lose, or are their attacks even happening? What are you hearing, James?
Well, you ask two interesting and related questions, but they're not necessarily the same answer. And one is Israel under attack? Are they attacking Israel? And two is Israel, you know, really threatened by this? And I think the answer to the first one may be yes, but the answer to the second one, absolutely not. And we can see that just from, obviously, the discrepancy in casualties between what the Palestinians and Hamas were able to do versus what Israel is able to do. So I was talking to a couple of Irish activists who have been in Gaza and working with the Palestinians for years now, and they were, for example, part of the Rachel Corey, the Spirit of Rachel Corey, which was attempting to get aid to Gaza, etc. And these activists were talking about some of their experiences there, where they're, you know, going around the West Bank and someone on a motorcycle will pull up and the guy behind him on the motorcycle will have a rocket in his hand, you know, getting ready to go somewhere to launch it. So it does happen, and they do have these weapons. But whether this is a serious threat to Israel, I think, is quite debatable. And I was also talking to Michelle Chosadovsky, who wrote a very important article. I haven't seen this analysis pop up anywhere else, so I hope people will go to Global Research .ca and read it. But basically, his analysis was talking about these war games that the U.S. and Israel were staging together right before this whole operation unfolded. And they had 1,000 U.S. military advisors there helping out with these war games. And lo and behold, suddenly they're under attack and they get to start using these very defense systems that they were talking about. So there's definitely some connection going on there. And Michelle Chosadovsky does the research on that article. I hope people will get it and get it out to people. But so yeah, basically.
Well, hold on. Maybe what you're saying is, you know, what I heard a lot about the first Gulf War, and I've interviewed some of the generals and a lot of the people involved in the first Gulf War, which we know was wholeheartedly made up. The Iraqis were suckered into it, and that's a long story. April Gillespie, the ambassador, George W. Bush. Oh, go ahead. Go into. They were slant drilling into your country there. Go ahead and invade. And then they, of course, attacked them all and started this war. But I heard just to kind of bring this into your point, James Corbett, is that one of the reasons for the Gulf War was to test out all the new space weapons, that this was the first space war, and they wanted to see how a lot of this stuff worked. And, of course, you know, guys with big toys like to play with their toys. And that was partially part of the reason they didn't invade, as we know, in Iran, or sorry, Iraq. It's very confusing with all these countries we're attacking. Iraq went on for, you know, another 10 plus years, and then we had to have 9/11 in order to finish the job. So is there a comparison to this? Because we see now, not only was Iron Dome ready and funded by the NDAA and thanks to American cash, all right, but now they've already got Magic Wand, the successor to that thing, going up, which is a major high-tech interceptor. Maybe this is a good way to test the shields, so to speak.
I think we have to look at basically any military conflict in this day and age as being waged for at least three reasons and probably more, but I think one would have to be the sort of laboratory experiment side of things where they get to test out all of these things that they've been developing since the last war. That's definitely part of it. I guess a secondary part of it would be to justify the expenditures that go into the defense budget and to justify future expenditures in terms of developing defenses and armory even further. And then the third part, of course, is always about the fear and the control that it gives the governments over the populations. If they can, look, you're under attack, there's this big military thing happening, you have to rally around the flag and defend your country and blah blah blah, if they can get enough people to really just fall hook, line and sinker for the narrative of what's being waged in their name, then they can really increase the control they already have over the citizenry. So at the very least, there's got to be those three reasons behind every military action we see coming along, or kinetic military action, or whatever they term they decide to give it. But yeah, I think that has to be at least one of the factors here, especially with Israel and constantly trying to up their game, I guess it is, in terms of the military armory that they're deploying against this, basically the world's largest prison, Gaza. People are just locked in there in that tiny area, 1.5 million plus people locked in there, and they are just sitting ducks every time Israel wants to come along and start bombing the hell out of them, which unfortunately they can do at the drop of a hat, as we've just seen.
We're not seeing much sympathy coming for the people of Gaza. And again, it's because they supposedly fired these bottle rockets and brought it upon themselves, which I think is a very convenient excuse. Now, here on the United States border, or the alleged border, forgetting that there's a North American Union now, in Mexico, we have heavily armed, very dangerous, murderous cartels that constantly are coming over and causing problems and killing people in the United States, yet we're not attacking, we're not bombing Mexico. And, you know, and this is the thing that kind of bothers me, because I was just talking before the Palestinian-Israel conflict exploded again, we were saying that I think we might have been led into some kind of a trap in this election, James, where the lesser of two evils for a lot of progressives and even just anarchist people, you know, all around the world, was to go with Obama because he wasn't in such a great relationship with Israel. And we all knew that cousin Mitt Romney was, you know, boyfriends with Bibi Netanyahu, and he would constantly tell us, you know, how they slept together and ate together and pooped together. And, you know, they're just close as two bedbugs. And so I think we were kind of suckered into this whole thing that, well, Obama might stick up for Iran. Obama might stand up against Israel a little bit. And you know, a lot of progressives aren't very friendly to Israel and are very friendly and want to help the people of Palestine. Yet when the first test comes, and actually I had said this a couple of days, James, before this all blew up, I said, this is going to be the test. And I started talking about this trap we fell into, just as I have with you. And the first time Israel starts attacking somebody, let's see what side Obama is on. So here he is on the other side of the world in a holiday in Cambodia, excuse the pun. And this all happens. And what does he say? What's the first thing that comes out of his mouth? Israel has a right to defend herself, and we're backing Israel, and Israel is our friend. And no love whatsoever. No sympathy for children dying in Palestine. I'm sorry, at least go, well, they have a right to defend themselves, but let's calm down a little bit here and quit killing all these children or start burning these children alive. He failed. He flunked major. And I think that we were kind of set up for it the whole time.
Absolutely. Not surprising if to anyone who really knows what the game is. And the fact this is the deep state we're dealing with, not the puppet politicians. But again, it strikes home every now and then because we can be suckered into that. But another important part of this analysis that I have to get out here before I forget is that just a week or two before all of this started, who was there in Palestine visiting Hamas and giving them aid? It was the Emir of Qatar. And it's just so bizarre because that is obviously a U.S. ally. Why is a U.S. ally encouraging and giving aid and giving money and basically supporting this Hamas group? Oh, is it because they're trying to set them up, trying to give them the green light, the go ahead? Oh, you know, it's okay, we're behind you. And then comes the hammer. It certainly seems that way. And again, it's coincidental with the war game timing. So again, all the pieces line up that this was set up to happen this way.
Yeah. What's the way out? And it just doesn't seem like this is going to end. You keep waiting for them just to roll in with their tanks and bulldozers and just get rid of all of these people and annex their land. I mean, it's already been done on paper, right? I mean, this is already done. Palestine is owned by Israel. They want to expand. I think didn't Obama say a year or two ago that they kind of have a right to expand back to some old territory? It seemed like he was getting their side on that, too. Does this ever end, or is it just a constant killing and torturing? Are we going to see anything get resolved? Because now we're getting the roadmap to peace bullshit again.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was going to be anything, you know, how this was going to resolve, and with this ceasefire that's been brokered and basically trying to go back to status quo after basically bombing the hell out of Palestine. It's just Israel is going to get away with it again. Kill 100, kill 200, kill however many civilians they want, and nothing's going to come of it. And it's really just it's not just frustrating. It's barf inducing. I don't know how else to say it. That this cycle of violence can just continue on and on and on, and all the while Israel encroaching more and more and more into the West Bank, taking a little bit more, cutting them off from East Jerusalem, and it's never reversing. It's never going the other way. So it seems inevitable at this point that eventually Israel is just going to try to sweep them out and eventually try to get the Gazans out and run them out into Egypt and just take it over.
Just give them Israeli citizenship. Is it that hard? I think there are a lot of people in Palestine that would be okay with that. Just go ahead and make it Israel. Give us equal rights as Israeli citizens and let us, you know, worship in the way we want, you know, kind of like we're supposed to be doing here in the United States. And I think people are so desperate at this point, even having their own state isn't even that important to them. Not dying and having food to eat and medicine for your children is important.
Well, of course, Israel's thinking about the demographic long war as well, because the Arabs outbreed them at a very high pace. So absolutely, if we expand that out 20 or 30 years, we could see an Arab-run Israel, which obviously is not what they have in mind. So I think they have to try to avoid that at all costs.
Well, too bad in the year 2014, a mass pandemic hit just Palestine and killed just Palestinians. That was too bad when that happened.
Yeah, well, race-specific bioweapons. Where have we read that before? Oh, yeah, the PNAC documents. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was Netanyahu, before he was prime minister again, that said that Palestinians are predisposed to be terrorists. In other words, they're born that way, folks. Now you see how the mind of evil works. James, I'm hoping we can keep you for the whole hour here. Is that cool?
Let's do it.
I want to talk a little bit of history with you in this day in history. You're listening to The Jack Blood Show. I am Jack Blood. James Corbett is our guest today. We are live Monday, 11/26/12. Stay with us.
Can two planes powderize three buildings? These are questions that could get you murked. Politically, socially, physically put into the dirt. Many swear that there's some kind of conflict of interest within. The conflict depends upon what you're interested in. You can chant 9/11 was an inside job all day until you say the Mossad, and pay closer attention to Flight 175 and the odd cylindrical pod beneath the fuselage. Then it's 2+2 level addition after you factor in the flight termination systems and flashbacks of the cash the good rabbi stole. September 10th style, right down the rabbit hole. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can get unlimited corporate news. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can have any mercenaries you choose. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can steal a couple million souls. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You get everything under control. The missile they hit the Pentagon. It was not an act of randomness. It murdered accountants, bookkeepers, and budget analysts. That side of the building was retrofitted prior to this to withstand bomb blast, a nickname the catcher's mitt. If that don't give you some kind of clue why they blew the mortar, you should probably take some medication for your new disorder. If buildings are burning, don't ever trust a news reporter. But 267 stories of gruesome slaughter. They'll never mention Dove Zakim and trillion stolen, much less missile-equipped Boeings even remote controlling. With System Planning Corporation International, the folks to see if you got some buildings you'd like to crash into. But that's impossible without the proper capital. That's why I'm asking you what you would do with unimaginable wealth. So much money you can't delve in it. Enough to buy 5 presidents and 12 senates. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can get unlimited corporate news. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can have any mercenaries you choose. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can steal a couple million souls. What can I get with 2.3 trillion? You can get everything. Trillion.
Well, and we were just talking about missing trillions, and that's a good question. What can you get with so many different trillions? Welcome back to the show. We take a quick break every half hour just to let you clear your heads and so I can think back on what we just might have said. And if you weren't clear, the question I was asking James is, we got bamboozled. Obama wasn't any better on the issue of Israel and the power of Israel and the warmongering Israel than was Cousin Mitt, who's completely disappeared. He's been wiped off. Talk about being wiped off the face of the earth. Mitt Romney got wiped off the face of the earth by the Republican Party once they were done using him to fix the election. I know it's all very complicated. James Corbett is with us, thecorbettreport.com. James also does several podcasts and a radio show at the RBN Radio Network that I helped found, and don't tell anyone that. Welcome back, James. Good having you, man.
All right. Well, good to be back, and good to be back, getting back into my radio show and all of that, because I've been away for the week, so I'm a bit out of sorts, as it were.
Oh, you've got to come back now. I know. I just had a almost two-day vacation, and getting here in front of the mic is so much easier when I've got you to talk to, James. TheCorbettReport.com. Go check it out. Tell everybody about it and make sure to get in there and support it. It is listener supported. It is reader supported. So if you want great sites like that to continue on, you must support them with a couple of dollars. That's how it works.
And let me just remind people, it's not that I'm just asking for money for nothing. I'm also doing a subscriber newsletter for people that has subscriber only videos and articles and things that people can get that in the mail every week, and hopefully that'll contribute to a little bit to the understanding of some of these issues that we're dealing with. But this week's subscriber e-newsletter is going to contain a video I did in Kuala Lumpur going around with Niall Bowie of nilebowie.blogspot.com and Richard Gage, the three of us doing a little tour of Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, cool. I tried to do that for my listeners once, James, and I failed miserably. Maybe you can share with me how to do it without putting all your time into it. I like to have, you know, a few hours a day for my kid and my family too, and that's the problem. But we have to talk off air, and you tell me how you've done this, because I want to give more to our people, but I don't want to be working 24 hours a day.
I'll give you a hint. I hope no one's listening, but the hint is clones. Lots of clones.
Okay. So kind of like I'm not going to go there. I had a great analogy, but I better not. Also, another thing that just blew up here the last few weeks that people aren't really talking about too much was the former head of command in the Middle East, who then went right to the Pentagon and was the head of the Department of Defense, and then moved over to the CIA and was head of the CIA, and people were grooming to be actually a candidate for president. David Petraeus caught in a massive scandal, and we're looking and seeing a purging somewhat of some of the generals in the military command by the newly voted for Obama administration. I have my own theories on it. We've shared those with the listeners. Obviously, getting our hands on absolute fly on the wall proof is not always easy. What was your take on all of this? Did you catch any of it? And do you have any kind of an opinion here?
Well, I was working on this diligently before I left for my trip, and unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to really keep track of it as I was gone, but absolutely, there was something very, very major happening under the surface there, and not only with Petraeus, but with a number of different people in high-ranking military positions, including even one person who was a commander of an aircraft carrier deployment that was actually deployed in the Middle East, in the Gulf area, when he was being reprimanded, and just on and on, lots of different military brass getting a peg taken down. And it was really interesting to see that all happening. And I have to concur with a lot of the other analysis that I've seen coming out, that basically this was a counter coup. Basically, there was a coup attempt or an October surprise attempt with the Benghazi debacle, which obviously was a stand down that must have been ordered from someone from somewhere, and seems to have been an attempt to try to get Middens in a better position for the presidential selection. But that didn't work out, and now it seems that the Obama elements are going after the military brass that were behind that. That's my reading of it. That's what it looks like. But again, we're just trying to sort things out from the outside. But but whatever it was certainly not just some sex scandal, and there was a lot going on under the surface that has potential ramifications for the entire Obama presidency, because, of course, I mean, the CIA, just such a vital linchpin in foreign policy now, especially since under Petraeus it was being militarized even further and taking on more of a strategic role with the drone strikes, etc.
So it seems there was a bit of a gambit on the part of the neocons and maybe some of the bankers that were backing Cousin Mitt versus Cousin Barry. For whatever reason, they didn't feel as confident that he could continue on with their plans for the next 4 years, or maybe they just felt, you know, Mitt would be a better face for the product. We're not sure. But it's funny that you go into all of that, James, because that's exactly my take on it. And I haven't seen a lot of people talk. I don't see that as kind of a shared opinion or a popular conspiracy theory, what have you. And it's hard to come up with the evidence, but it's also hard to explain how these guys, who all pretty much have dirt on them, are riding this out while Petraeus is being hung out to dry.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they're nipping it in the butt. You know, there could be another part of this, and that is, Jeb Bush, if he's going to get in for 2016, they don't really need a war hero Petraeus in the way.
Right. That's a good point, because, of course, Petraeus was the darling of the neocons for a while there, and his name was floated around as a presidential contender. Well, this certainly takes care of that, and no more worry about that. So certainly it would clear the decks for someone like Jeb.
Yeah. I also see Clinton and Panetta up to their eyeballs in this little plot. And we know they went out to hide in Australia when the hammer first started coming down. It was like Night of the Long Knives, and they got the hell out of there. You know, I don't know if there's going to be any accountability. I don't think Clinton is scared of anyone. Panetta's a big-time Clinton loyalist and a full-time globalist, internationalist. This is the guy you want controlling your military, folks. And I don't think they are very loyal to Obama. I think Obama got stabbed in the back. I mean, he's Caesar, and he managed to crawl away and survive. Now the senators are going down.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, if only just so we can see sort of how this drama actually unfolds. But again, in terms of how this has affected what could have happened, it's obviously quite speculative. But I've been away, so I don't really know the latest. But I know Clinton is stepping down, or was planning on stepping down. Have you decided where she's going yet, or what she's going to surface as after this transition?
She's out, but she's got a lot more dirt on Barry. And so she's still got a few trump cards to play in this case. And then maybe that's going to save face for her. But I think she got caught with her hand in the cookie jar, plain and simple. And we can't put anything past the Clintons or their ambitions or the ambitions of their employers, the Henry Kissingers of the world, so to speak. But as Scott Horton, who does a show here with, I'm sure you're familiar with Scott Horton, as he said, I don't really know what's going on, but I hope these guys just tear each other apart. He's enjoying the party. Just go ahead and take each other out, and we'll stand by and applaud. No matter why it's happening, we really don't need to know or care, but just go ahead and start taking each other out. It's like somebody got caught cheating at the poker table, James, and, you know, guns came out. Derringer here, a shotgun there, and we're sitting here watching and going, get him. I don't care.
Yeah, at a certain point, you just have to throw your hands up and say, well, we can only see from the outside what's happening, but the more of these people we take out of the picture, the better, I hope. It depends what comes along to replace it, though. I mean, you know, who's going to be the sitting in that chair in the future? That's always the question.
Yeah, well, people never do well surviving these things, so I think some of the stain could go back on Obama. These guys aren't, they're not kids. They know how to play rough. And the Clintons have taken out many of their adversaries in the past, and if I were Cousin Barry, I'd make sure to have my own security. Maybe the new Black Panthers or something, or somebody that can't stand down on an order. But it does, you know, show that these people do fight each other. It's not always as simple as it looks, a big conspiracy where everybody gets along just to enslave the rest of us. There is a constant game being played here of upmanship and to try to take control and dole out the pieces of the pie. Hey, what is your opinion of Hamid Gol? Probably never asked you that before, and it might seem like it's a little bit out of the blue. The former ISI chief from Pakistan, who has come out and said some things about 9/11 in the past. What is your opinion of him?
That is a good question. It's been a couple of years since I've even really heard anything from him. I would say I would take anything he was saying with a grain of salt, because, of course, we know the ISI has to be up to its eyeballs with whatever was happening there with Osama bin Laden, etc. anyway. And whatever that story was, I mean, we know that, for example, bin Laden was in Rawalpindi getting treatment at the military hospital there on September 10th, as reported even by CBS News. So that's not a matter of controversy. And of course, that's an ISI hub. So, and we know the accusations about the former ISI chief wiring the money to the alleged hijackers and all of that, those kinds of connections. So someone from the ISI coming out and trying to point the finger somewhere else has to be taken with a grain of salt. But, sure. But at any rate, I think there is obviously some insider information to be gleaned from people like that.
I bring it up because he's one of the people who have called the Mumbai attacks in India an inside job sponsored by India to blame and point the finger at Pakistan, the purest example of a false flag. We had analyzed that, as I'm sure you did, and watched how the police stood by and did nothing while these shooters came in and killed and maimed people. And there were reporters on the ground. This isn't really secondhand information. It's firsthand information. I'm watching these cops do absolutely nothing while these shooters who could have easily been taken out in Mumbai were allowed to wreak havoc on the people. And today is the fourth anniversary, the attacks blamed on Pakistan, sponsored by Lashkar-e-Taiba. I'm not sure what the background is on them. I might have forgotten, or it fell down the memory hole. Here is Hamid Gol. Let me just play a clip here for a second, talking about how he thinks it's an inside job, and they're talking about maybe who benefited from this inside job. He's not the only one that says it, but he's one of them. So let me play this for a minute, James.
Which it turned out that the initial acquisition of Pakistan was totally wrong. It was an inside job carried out by their uniformed officers. And also this Maligaon latest attack of 31 bombs, series of bombs which exploded and killed a lot of people. And that was also pinned on Pakistan. But that acquisition turned out to be wrong too, even by their own investigation. So there was no question of sending our DG intelligence. It's not at all acceptable. Nobody would do that. So why should Pakistan do it?
It's very different to what you're saying to how international media have been covering this story.
So that would be a good question. Why would Pakistan just openly attack and sponsor an attack against India? They've got nuclear weapons, too. Obviously, the two haven't gotten along very good for a long time. But who would benefit from that attack, which would immediately be blamed on Pakistan?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of these types of false flags that are just identifiable by the fact that you would have to be absolutely certifiably insane to go ahead with the attack. And sometimes that's an angle that people just don't even consider. So it is an important angle to take a look at. One of the people in connection with the whole Mumbai attack that I've always had my eye on was David Headley, who was implicated in it. He pleaded guilty to his role in helping to plan the attacks. And oh yeah, by the way, he was a DEA agent who was almost certainly also an intelligence operative used by the U.S. in after 9/11. So there's that angle as well.
Well, and then you have Pakistan under Bush. They were our best friends. They were helping us with the wars. I just was writing down the leader's name, and then it went right out of my head. Of course, Musharraf. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Steps down. They have new people come in. And the next thing we know, Pakistan's the enemy. We're bombing them on a daily basis. We find bin Laden there. By the way, I don't know if you caught that news. More information has come out. No one actually saw bin Laden being dumped at sea. There's no fingerprints, no DNA, no pictures, no nothing. No plate left. That's all gone. They've wiped that off the face of the earth, the so-called compound. But now all of a sudden, Obama comes in and Pakistan is an enemy. And I look back and I think of people like, Webster Trapley and others who were literally just coming out and saying this is what they're going to do. We look at what Zbigniew Brzezinski wants to move on the grand chessboard, and they're controlling Obama. I just mentioned his name. There are more that were saying this before Obama even got in. And the next thing we know, they're the devil. They're the enemy. And in 2008, this would have been just days, right? 2008, and then the date is today 11/26/12. So that would have been literally days after Obama got elected that the Mumbai attacks took place.
Yep, I think they were exactly right. I think there was a lot of chessboard setting going on in those early days, and certainly it was Obama who expanded the drone strikes and got all of that going in earnest. So I think you're right. I think there's definitely been a concerted attempt to try to portray Pakistan as the enemy, and they've been doing a good job of that with all the people who are just swallowing it up. Yeah, by the way, when I was in Kuala Lumpur, I found Bigfoot and killed him and dumped him in the ocean, but I didn't take any pictures, so you'll just have to take my word for it.
I just want to make sure you gave him the proper burial.
Yeah, exactly. Shaved him, washed him, and threw him at sea.
They're still going with that one, of course, James, that we gave him the proper Muslim burial. Not one Muslim anywhere in the world agrees with that one, but there you go.
Yeah, it will never end as long as people continue to swallow it. And so many of the things that we talk about come back to that. I mean, the question is always, well, where do we go from here? How do we expose these lies? What are we going to do about this? And that's of course, part of the whole thing that came up at the 9/11 conference, because, again, we're 11 years out now, and we're still holding conferences like this. But what's actually happening about it? And for me, it always continues to come back time and time again to basically not, I want to say the alternative media, but I don't just mean that, like, you and I talking here on this radio program. I mean every single person who's listening to this, because the alternative media is the grassroots. It is the people who are listening exactly as much as the people who are talking, because everyone has Twitter or Facebook or whatever it is that they can start to spread the information for themselves. And, you can have all the war crime convictions in faraway courts that you want, but it's not going to mean anything unless people know about it, talk about it, unless they're convicted in the court of public opinion. And again, that's something that every single one of us has the obligation to work towards, and we have to spread that understanding. So again, whether it's Pakistan and what's going on there, or whether it's Osama bin Laden, or whether it's 9/11, or whatever myth it is in particular that you're out there, that you're energized about, I hope people are out there helping to help spread the understanding about this, because again, it only comes through understanding. The only real revolution will come through a revolution in understanding, and we have to all chip into that together. There's no one-size-fits-all solution, and there's no way that one of us is going to, be the one that saves the world, like Hollywood always tries to force feed us.
Well, that'll be Jeb Bush again. Back to Bush, the people of Pakistan. Those billboards they've been putting around America with the face of George W. Bush. Miss me yet? I think the people of Pakistan are going, yeah, we actually do, because somehow the Obama people like India better. Well, there's more of them, and they've been working very well for us. So we We have to help them a little bit. Okay. Two countries at each other's throats, doing false flags and slithering and sliming everywhere, both armed with nuclear weapons. Never talk about them. Don't even mention them. That's not a problem. However, Palestine, Iran, Syria, Libya, these are the countries we have to get under control here.
We have to quake in our boots about as well. Oh.
Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, and all the rest.
But not North Korea. Don't worry. Their nukes are friendly, I guess.
Well, they have nukes.
Yes, they do. But that doesn't matter. I mean, don't think about them. Yes, they have nukes, and they're headed by a crazy man. But so, I mean, and they threaten to use them. They have rockets. They're launching over our heads here in Japan all the time. But again, don't think about that. Think about the boogeyman we tell you to think about.
They're a very convenient boogeyman. And, you know, Red Dawn 2 just came out. They turned it into a kiddie movie. I know the first Red Dawn was kind of a, you know, Brat Pack movie. There were kids in it, but that had appeal to adults. It wasn't so, they weren't all models running around, you know, posing as I'm seeing in the previews for Red Dawn 2. But, you know, the interesting story here was they filmed it and it looked really good. And the premise was this time, instead of the Russians attacking us at dawn, it was the Chinese. And the word came down, James, no, that's not very politically correct. You're going to have to refilm the movie, and we're going to take control of the movie, we being the Pentagon. And North Korea is going to be the enemy this time. So it's not that we're completely ignoring North Korea.
No, I guess not.
It's a propaganda movie of how evil that they are, and they could invade the United States. Like that's going to happen. But,
well, exactly. I think that's obviously why it is. And because North Koreans don't tend to be a large part of the Hollywood market. So I don't think they have to worry about appeasing them as much as China these days.
Also, 1986, this day in history, the Iran-Contra scandal, Ronald Reagan announced the members of what will become known as the Tower Commission. Tower did his job. He covered it all up. Then he wanted payback, and then he went up in a plane that crashed. He was killed. He knew where the bodies were buried in Iran-Contra. That all worked out rather nicely. And here we are sitting on a brand. This is the difference between 1980s and the 2000 and the 12s. We wanted answers when we found out we were arming Iran, our enemy, and smuggling drugs and getting black budget money. I just heard Oliver North on the Bort show today and kind of reminded me of all this too. But here in 2012, we've got Fast and Furious and Gunwalker and a Wide Receiver and all of this that had been going on for the Bush administration to the Obama administration. And it's very similar to Iran-Contra. The witnesses say that they are getting protection from the U.S. government to smuggle drugs into the United States of America and to continue to kill their rivals and anyone who gets in the way. And yet no one seems to care that much about it. I mean, it's Iran-Contra. It might even be bigger because we don't know where some of the money might be going. And you know, again, I'm going to follow the money there. But there's no investigation. There's no finger pointing. And Obama even gets his second term. It's amazing to think that, I guess, if Iran-Contra would have happened in 2010 or 2011, James Corbett, I guess we would have just went, oh, well, whatever.
I'll one-up you. Maybe Benghazi was a type of Iran-Contra because Stevens and the CIA, what were they doing there? Were they involved in running guns up to Syria? What was their actual role? Again, these are some important questions that any actual journalist would be following up if we had any actual journalists left in the mainstream media.
This is, what are we talking about there? What the meaning of the word terrorism is? Terrorists? I had Corsi on my show, Jerome Corsi, and he kept calling these... He was, you know, basically co-signing the company line here on this whole thing that terrorists attacked our embassy, which, as we know, wasn't an embassy at all, in Libya. And it was Al-Qaeda. Well, we're working with Al-Qaeda, so we'll get to the bottom of all of this. No, they were terrorists. Now, on that premise, I would assume that if we're holding court in their country and they're attacking us, if that's true, and that's not even the story, James, that's the cover story. But if that was true, would they be terrorists or would they be freedom fighters? That's all very confusing. So that is, what did Obama know? Why did he not say terrorists? Because he's a Muslim and he's coddling the Muslims and, you know, that whole bullshit line. While all of this is going on behind the scenes, the purging of generals, the quid pro quo, attack, and shooting at the poker table. This is the fluff that we get here in 2012.
Absolutely. It doesn't even seem that they're trying that hard to try to sell the lies to the people or any of it. They just put it out there on the table and no one even asks the questions. So I think you're right. There's a lack of questioning going on, and that speaks to the general state of the populace in general. If we're not told what questions to be curious about, I guess people can safely forget about it. And it's sad to see that happening, but we're watching it happening right in front of our eyes. So the question again is, what are people going to do about it?
Squirrel! Do you ever see the movie called Up? The talking dogs are attacking the good people of Up, the good cartoon characters, and they're chasing them with little toy planes and shooting at them, and the good guys yell, "Squirrel!" And the dogs just forget about what they're doing immediately and go try to chase this imaginary squirrel. In this case, it's Black Friday! Yeah. It's Justin Bieber! Whatever. Oh, man. I feel a little bit ashamed to be an American today, and normally I don't. I love
Jack,
my country.
Didn't you hear Gangnam Style became the most watched video on YouTube? This is big news. I just saw a big CNN report about Psy.
Do you know all the kids in the neighborhood are dancing to that song? It's
good on them. Everyone needs something mindless entertainment, but when that becomes a news story, that's pretty sad.
Well, and then there's something to that, too, and I'll let you go on this, that South Korea is our new trading partner. In other words, we're not only expanding CAFTA deep into Central and South America to fulfill the free trade area of the Americas, the Pan-American Union, so to speak, but we've also, in that deal, when we put Panama, some of the newer entrants into CAFTA, the expansion of NAFTA, folks, we put South Korea in. Is South Korea part of the Americas now? Is that part of the Pan-American Union? Obviously, it appears that it is. So next thing you know, we get Gangnam Style, the big South Korean rock star over here dancing. I don't know. Maybe some of this is not planned. Maybe some of it is, James. It just makes me a little bit sick. Hey, I got to get you out of here. So any last words, any parting shots for my audience today, this Monday?
All I can say is keep your eye on my website, because I'm going to be coming out with a ton of stuff in the next couple weeks anyway. I've got tons of stuff from the conference, and I hope to be getting most of it out on the table, so I hope people will be checking it out.
You're not married with children, right?
Not yet. I'm married, but not yet.
Well, I'm thankful to your wife, or your life partner, I should say, James. And not that there's anything wrong with that. No, I'm just kidding, folks. And I'm thankful that you have time to put into this. You're one of the best, most solid researchers out there, one of the best spoken, and I just really appreciate you spending time with us. It's the Corbett Report with two T's, CorbettReport.com, linked at DeadlineLive.info. All right, James, we'll talk to you real soon.
All right, Jack. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And on that, we are going to move into the second hour of our broadcast today.